And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. You know, an interesting little tidbit. At the end of the American Civil War, when a lot of people had their lives destroyed and literally had to start over, many of them came to El Paso, changed their names, and started life anew. The problem is, when they changed their names, if something happened to them, there was no way to notify a family. So there was many, many individuals who allegedly vanished at the end of the American Civil War. Now, quite a number of them accepted the Emperor of Brazil's invitation to go to Brazil. He gave them land grants, and they actually started a Confederate town. Flew the Confederate flag until sometime in the 1960s. Well, don't know the status of Rich Forrest today. They were going to give him, put him in hospice. And we have absolutely no idea what the status is. And hopefully we'll find out shortly. Well, today's September 10th. Tomorrow's the anniversary of September the 11th. 20 years after the planes hit the Twin Towers. I was sitting at my desk. I was vice president, general counsel of a company here in El Paso. And I was listening to Paul Strelzin, a friend of mine who was had a radio show in the mornings, and he started talking about planes that hit the Twin Towers. Well, we had been in New York. We lived there for several years. In fact, the first bombing, I was en route to the area where that first bomb went off and stopped to pick up some glasses that were being repaired for me. Otherwise, we would have been there. And I would have been royally PO'd, let me tell you. Well, this is the 253rd day of the year. 112 days remain till the year's over with. On this day in history, in 506 AD, the bishops of Visigothic Gaul meet in the Council of Agde. The Visigoths were the Germanic tribes that destroyed Rome. 1419, John the Fearless, Duke of Burgundy, is assassinated by adherents of the Dauphin, the future Charles VII of France. The Dauphin in France was similar to the Prince of Wales in England. 1509, an earthquake known as the Lesser Judgment Day hits Constantinople, which, for those that are not familiar, was the capital of the Eastern Roman Empire that became the Byzantine Empire. It occurred in the Sea of Marmara at about 10 in the evening, at an estimated magnitude of 7.2 on the surface wave magnitude scale. There was a tsunami and 45 days of aftershocks. The death toll is not really known. The estimate's somewhere between 1 and 13,000. But everyone thought the world was coming to an end. 1515, Thomas Wolsey's invested as a cardinal. 1547, the Battle of Pinkie, the last full-scale military confrontation between Scotland and England, results in a decisive victory for the forces of Edward VI, who was King of England. 1561, the Fourth Battle of Kawanakajima, Takeda Shingen defeats Yusugi Kenshin in the climax of their ongoing conflicts. 1570, Spanish Jesuit missionaries land in present-day Virginia to establish the Ahakan Mission, which is a very short-lived mission. They were trying to establish it in the vicinity of the Virginia Peninsula. They were going to bring Christianity to the Virginia Indians, whether they wanted it or not. The effort to found St. Mary's Mission predated the founding of Jamestown by about 36 years. In February 1571, the entire party was massacred by Indians except for Alonzo de Olmos. Next year, a Spanish party from Florida went to the area, rescued him, and killed an estimated 20 Indians. When you mess with somebody's religion, I don't care if they're a pagan, Christian, Catholic, Protestant, whatever they are, they tend to get a little testy. And that's basically what happened here. 1573, German pirate Klein Heinzlein and 33 of his crew beheaded in Hamburg. 1608, John Smith is elected council president of Jamestown, Virginia. 1776, American Revolutionary War. Nathan Hale volunteers to be a spy for the Continental Army. Who said those immortal words? Regret that I have but one life to give for my country. He went into New York City, was captured by the British, and executed. He was officially designated a state hero of Connecticut. Born in 1755 in Connecticut Colony. Died in, at age 21, September 22nd, 1776, in New York City. They hung him. Went to Yale University, or Yale College as it was then. Yep. 1798, the Battle of St. George's Cay, British Honduras defeats Spain. 1813, the U.S. defeats the British fleet at the Battle of Lake Erie during the War of 1812. 1846, Elias Howes granted a patent for the sewing machine. That was before Singer got involved. 1858, George Mary Searle discovers the asteroid 55 Pandora. 1897, the Latimer Massacre. Sheriff's Posse kills 19 unarmed striking immigrant miners in Latimer, Pennsylvania. 1898, Empress Elizabeth of Austria is assassinated by Luigi Lucchini. 1901, Russian Civil War. The Red Army captures Kazan. 1919, Republic of German Austria signs the Treaty of Saint-Germain-en-Laye, ceding significant territories to Italy, Yugoslavia, and Czechoslovakia. 1932. Now, the only reason the Germans threw in the towel in 1919 is they had just lost World War I. 1932, New York City Subway's third competing rail subway system, the municipality-owned IND, is opened. I've ridden on the New York City subway system. It is a phenomenal structure. But there's a lot of tunnels that nobody knows what's down them. 1936, first World Individual Motorcycle Speedway Championship held at London's Wembley Stadium. 1937, nine nations attend the Nyon Conference to address international piracy in the Mediterranean. There's still piracy today. You just can't stamp it out. 1939, World War II. Okay, 1939, World War II. The submarine HMS Oxley is mistakenly sunk by the submarine HMS Triton near Norway and becomes the Royal Navy's first loss of a submarine during that war. 1939, World War II. The Canadian Declaration of War on Germany receives royal assent. 1942, World War II. The British Army carries out an amphibious landing on Madagascar to relaunch Allied offensive operations in the Madagascar campaign. 1943, World War II. In the course of Operation Achilles, German troops begin their occupation of Rome. 1960, at the Summer Olympics in Rome, Abebe Bikila becomes the first sub-Saharan African to win a gold medal. Won the marathon running in bare feet. 1961, The Italian Grand Prix, a crash causes the death of German Formula One driver Wolfgang von Trips and 13 spectators who were hit by his Ferrari. That is the deadliest accident in Formula One history. 1967, the people of Gibraltar vote to remain a British dependency rather than becoming part of Spain. 1974, the Guinea-Bissau gains independence from Portugal. 1976, a British Airways Hawker, a Siddeley Trident, and an NX Adria DC-9 collide near Zagreb, Yugoslavia. 176 people die. 1977, Hamida Djandoubi, convicted of torture and murder, is the last person to be executed by guillotine in France. And it is said the executioner made some cutting remarks during the ceremony. 2000, Operation Barrasse successfully frees 6 British soldiers held captive for 2 weeks and contributes to the end of the Sierra Leone Civil War. 2001, Antonio de Costa Santos, mayor of Campinas, Brazil, is assassinated. 2001, during his appearance on a British TV game show, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, a contestant by the name of Charles Ingram reached the £1 million top prize, but later came out he cheated his way to the top by listening to coughs from his wife and another contestant. 2002, Switzerland, traditionally a neutral country, becomes a full member of the United Nations. 2007, former Prime Minister of Pakistan, Nawaz Sharif, returns to Pakistan after 7 years in exile. They did that following a military coup in October of 1999. 2008, the Large Hadrian Collider at CERN, described as the biggest scientific experiment in history, is powered up in Geneva, Switzerland. And in 2017, Hurricane Irma makes landfall at Cudahy Key in Florida. It was a Category 4 after causing catastrophic damage throughout the Caribbean. 134 people died. It's $64.76 billion in damages in 2017 dollars. So, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Let's see what we've got on holidays and observances. American Indian Heritage Day in Guyana. Children's Day in Honduras. Christian Feast Days. Alexander Cromwell in the Episcopal Church. Albert. Blessed Thomas Sugi, Charles Spinola, and the Great Martyrs of Nagasaki. Edmund James Peck in the Anglican Church of Canada. Nicholas of Tolentino. Theodard of Maastricht. Gibraltar National Day. St. George K. Day in Belize. Teacher's Day in China. And World Suicide Prevention Day. Internationally. All right, let's see what else we got on this particular day in history. In 422, Saint Celestine the First begins his reign as Catholic Pope. And in those days, it was actually a reign. He had a country, he had armies. 506, 35 bishops. We've talked about that. 918, Arnulf the First, the Old, becomes Landseer of Flanders. 1349, Jews who survived a massacre in Constance, Germany, are actually burned at the stake. 1510, Bishop Frederick of Bath recaptures Oldenzaal. 1547, the English demand Edward the Sixth, who was 10 years old, marry Mary Queen of the Scots, who was 5 years old. Talk about a child bride. 1785, Prussia signs a trade agreement with the U.S. 1823, Simon Bolivar is named president of Peru. 1838, Hector Berlioz's opera Benvenuto Cellini premieres in Paris. 1845, King Wilhelm II opens the Amsterdam Stock Exchange. 1847, the first theater opens up in Hawaii. So instead of sitting on the beach all the time, you can now go watch the theater. 1849, was on this date, was the first performance by Edwin Booth, who played Richard III. He was the brother of John Wilkes Booth. 1858, John Holden hits what's known as the first recorded home run, Brooklyn versus New York. 1861, on this date, the Battle of Cheat Mountain in Elkwater, West Virginia. 1861 is the Battle of Carnifex Ferry in Virginia, 170 casualties. 1869, a Baptist minister supposedly invented the rickshaw in Yokohama, Japan. 1880, Pierre Savagnin de Brazza signs a treaty with King Makoko of Congo. 1882, the first international conference to promote anti-Semitism meets in Dresden, Germany. It's called the Congress for Safeguarding of Non-Jewish Interest. 1894, London taxi driver George Smith is the first to be fined for drunk driving. 1898, Lord Kitchener and his fleet of ships sails from Khartoum to Fashoda in the Sudan. That whole area erupted thanks to the Mahdi. Utrecht soccer team UVV forms on this date, 1902. 1905, the Japanese battleship Mikasa explodes. 1910, the Great Idaho Fire destroys 3 million acres of timber. 1913, the Lincoln Highway opens as the first paved coast-to-coast highway in this country. 1919, New York City welcomes home General John J. Pershing and 25,000 World War I soldiers. 1919, a Treaty of Saint Germain, Austria ended its incorporation with Germany, became a separate country. 1919, China becomes a member of the League of Nations. 1926, the Allies and the Germans signed the Treaty of Koblenz. 1926, Germany joins the League of Nations. 1931, Lord Cecil of the British government says war was never so improbable as it was under the League of Nations. Okay. In 1939, Canada, under the leadership of Mackenzie King, Prime Minister, he was the 10th Prime Minister of Canada, declares war on Germany. 1940, on this date, Buckingham Palace was hit by a German bomb. 1942, the RAF, the Royal Air Force, drops 100,000 bombs on Dusseldorf. 1943, the Italian fleet anchors at Malta. 1944, Lieutenant General Frederick Browning had an argument with Montgomery and said, "Sir, I think we might be going a bridge too far." That became the title of a book about the fact that they dropped a unsupported
parachute regiment out in front of the Allied lines, and they got their head handed to them by the Germans. 1945, Vidkun Quisling sentenced to death for collaborating with the Nazis. He was the Prime Minister of Norway and a collaborator. 1945, what was known as Miracle Mike, Mike the Headless Chicken, is decapitated in Fruita, Colorado. He lived for another 18 months before he choked to death. 1948, Biz Criminal Division sentences war criminal Jacob Folks to life in prison. 1950, on this date, Joe DiMaggio, who later married Marilyn Monroe, becomes the first person to hit 3 home runs in a game at Griffith Stadium. 1953, Swanson sold its first TV dinner to the American public. 1955, the immortal show Gunsmoke premiered on CBS TV. 1961, Mickey Mantle, who I got the chance to meet in New York City at his restaurant, becomes the 7th player to hit 400 home runs. That was an interesting achievement. Unfortunately, he later died of, he had not exactly been taking care of his health. But that ends our history segment. We've been talking about the paranormal. And certainly there's a lot of paranormal events that have happened. From ghost of starlets to ghost animals. We were talking yesterday about paranormal tales of the Old West. One famous individual who was said to have been murdered by a member of his own gang was Jesse James. Now, he raised hell as an outlaw, and as you might suspect, he hadn't gone quietly into the afterlife. The homestead in Kearney, Missouri, where he and his brother Frank grew up, and where their brother Archie was killed in a gunfight with Pinkerton agents in 1875, is a hotbed of paranormal activity. It includes darting lights, cries of pain, muffled voices, even gunshots are heard in the middle of the night. Some say James is still acting out from the other side, still sore. He got shot in the back in 1876 by the man many call the coward, Robert Ford. And Ford actually reenacted the shooting for paying audiences until he died of a gunshot wound at age 30. Could be that James is angry he's never allowed to rest in peace. He was initially buried on the farm, and he was dug up and reburied nearby Mount Olivet Cemetery. And there's one more school of thought that he was never killed by Ford, but faked his death and went on to live to age 104 under an assumed name in Texas. But as many entities are said to do, he went back to the old farm so nobody would forget him. Now, another individual who rose to the heights of fame was Annie Oakley. Now, a lot of people wonder, was she really as great a trick shooter as they say? Certainly, the woman who was born as Phoebe Ann Moses knew how to use a rifle. She was a crack shot since she was old enough to hold a gun. Kept her family fed by shooting game, and by her teens was competing against the best shooters on the Wild West circuit. Her most famous move in Buffalo Bill's Wild West show was to shoot a cigarette out of the mouth of her husband, Frank Butler. But the question is, and a lot of people still wonder to this day, did she really do that with her sharpshooting, or was it a trick? Now, legend has it that her ghost settled the question. When an argument once broke out in her hometown of North Star, Ohio, whether she was the best shooter of all time, a playing card fluttered down from the sky. Nobody knows where it came from, but it had a bullet hole in the middle of it, and one of her tricks used to be somebody would throw a card in the air and she'd shoot out the spot. Well, as you might guess, some of the most haunted places in the world are places where there was a lot of death. One of the most active places are battlefields, such as Gettysburg or Gallipoli or even the Somme battlegrounds. Spirits of the soldiers killed at the Civil War battleground of Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, are said to haunt the nearby farmhouses and inns. Spectral figures have been spotted and even photographed at a cemetery on the World War I battlefields of Gallipoli in Turkey. There was 250,000 casualties there, so if death causes a disruption of the ether, certainly that's enough to do it. In France, scholars reviewing the diaries of soldiers in the 1916 Battle of the Somme found multiple accounts of paranormal encounters. And of course, one of the bloodiest places in England is the Tower of London. Margaret Pole, Countess of Salisbury, was condemned to the chopping block by King Henry VIII, but the execution, which took place in 1541, went a trifle awry. The executioner hacked her up as she ran around, and her screams can still be heard in the tower. Another victim of Henry's wrath, second wife Anne Boleyn, also prowls the grounds. Without her head, I might add. And you can hear Lady Arabella Stuart sobbing. She died while in prison in the tower. And her sobs can be heard throughout the building. Well, let's talk about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. It's in Illinois. And usually the events happen under a full moon. The white-clad individual known as the Madonna of Bachelor's Grove appears amid the tombstones, sometimes carrying a baby, searching for her dead sister's grave. And a lot of visitors have told stories of strange lights and phantom dogs and compasses and GPS devices that literally go haywire. And the specter of a man with a lantern and a farmer with his plow horse have also been seen. Well, Illinois, let's go to Random Hall and ask yourself, who's the brown lady said to haunt Random Hall? This ghost has been spotted and even photographed drifting through this Norfolk, England manor house. The house was built about 1620. Some say it's Lady Dorothy Townsend, who in the 18th century is locked up in the place by her husband, Viscount Turnip Townsend, and she now haunts her old prison home. And from England, let's turn our attention to the place in Japan known as Suicide Forest. For some reason, so many people come to Japan's Akugahara Jukai, or Sea of Trees, to end their own lives in the dark woods. Warning signs are posted. Your life is a precious gift from your parents. Think about your parents, siblings, and children. But in spite of those signs, as many as 100 people a year come there to take their lives through hanging, poisoning, drug overdoses, and there are actually patrols of volunteers who constantly are on the lookout for visitors entering the forest alone. And quite often they find bodies. Well, let's go to Australia, the place known as the Monte Cristo Homestead. One of the best-known ghosts of this homestead is a reclusive widow who converted a room in her Australian home into a chapel and almost never left it until she died. Now wanders this isolated Victorian manor. Built in 1884, overlooking the town of Junee, it's said to be the most haunted house in Australia. It's got a very violent history that includes a maid who fell to her death from a balcony and a stable boy who died in the coach house. Nobody really knows how or why he died. And one of the oldest buildings in Scotland, a former jail in Aberdeen, has got a dark history. built between 1616 and 1629. What's known as the toll booth held women accused of witchcraft before their public burning. Suspected Jacobites during the 18th century Scottish uprising against the Protestant King George I and impoverished children, some kidnapped off the streets who were shipped to the American colonies as virtual slaves. The toll booth is now a museum, but it's known for such ghostly sounds as rattling keys and strange voices that seem to come from everywhere. And then we have Waverly Hills Sanatorium. Now, in 2006, a photographer captured a haunted image in the abandoned Louisville, Kentucky tuberculosis hospital. Some say it's a nurse named Mary Lee who hung herself in one of the wards after a married doctor got her pregnant and refused to divorce his wife and marry her. She's one of many spirits haunting this site. Shadows are said to dance across the graffiti-covered walls. The shapeless forms dash in and out of doorways. You hear cries for help and ghostly warnings. Well, you know, there's a lot of people who, for whatever reason, have decided to make their fortunes out of chasing ghosts. And you've seen the TV shows, and of course my books on Unsolved Mysteries, Lost Treasures, and Ghosts have done very well. I used to go to Comic-Cons and events like that, but of course COVID has put a stop to that. Well, let's talk about Salem's youngest victim. You know, when the witchcraft trials really got rolling, the accusers didn't expect respect, sex, age, or anything else. And quite often, accusations were made because they wanted to take the property of the victim. Well, the youngest victim was 4 years old when she was sent to jail. And she had endured a lifetime of pain and abuse and injustice, and she wasn't even 5 years old. In February 1692, authorities in Salem, Massachusetts, subjected Dorothy Good to fierce interrogation after girls in the settlement accused her of suspicious behavior. One of the accusers, Ann Putnam, gave a deposition where she said, "I saw the apparition of Dorothy Good, Sarah Good's daughter, who then immediately almost choked me and tortured me most grievously. And she has several times since tortured me by biting and pinching." The strange thing was, in their enthusiasm to rout out evil and witchcraft, an accuser didn't have to produce any evidence, just their sworn statement. And as with so many of those targeted during the trials, Dorothy Good was an easy target. Lived on the edge of a closed-minded society, consumed with fear of the unknown. In fact, she was only 4 years old, didn't spare her the hatred of others in the village. Now, her mother, Sarah Good, was considered a local menace. She was an indigent woman, almost certainly suffering mental illness. Went door-to-door begging for money after she and her laborer husband lost their home to creditors. Taken from her mother on March 24th and thrown into a coal jail cell, she may, according to rumor, have been put in chains at 4 years old. Well, finally, she told them what they wanted to hear. Her mother, appearing to be under the influence of the devil, gave little Dorothy a snake. And the child also told them it had a little snake that used to suck on the lowest joint of her forefinger. When they inquired where, pointing to other places, the child told them, "Not there, but here," pointing to the lowest point of the forefinger, where they observed a deep red spot about the size of a flea bite. So on this evidence, they concluded the snake served as the girl's familiar, a witch's servant in animal form. So without being charged or put on trial or a grand jury or anything else, she spent 8 months in the Ipswich jail till her father scraped together the 50 pounds needed to get her out. She was 5 years old by that time. Authorities then went after her mother. Now, two of the girls who'd been acting out blamed their fits on Sarah and two other adults. So charged with certain detestable arts called witchcraft and sorceries, Sarah was put on trial while she was grilled by Magistrate John Hawthorne. And he asked her, "Sarah Good, do you not see now what you've done? Why don't you tell us the truth? Why do you torment these poor children?" And she said, "I didn't do it." Another witness against her was a woman who had taken Sarah and her husband into her home, but kicked them out because of Sarah's malicious and spiteful attitude. And that woman went on to blame Sarah for the unusual death of a number of cattle. Well, based on the flimsiest of evidence, she was sentenced to die. Her execution put off only long enough for her to give birth to another daughter named Mercy, who died shortly after that, likely from neglect and malnutrition. At that point, Sarah was hung, along with four of the women, on July 29th. Dorothy was finally released on December 10th. She never really recovered from her ordeal, spending the rest of her life suffering psychological problems, as you might guess. You know, as mass hysteria and fear swept Puritan America, more than 200 people, mostly women and girls, stood accused of possessing supernatural powers from the devil. The Salem witch trials, which went from 1692 to 1693, resulted in death sentences for 20 people, 14 women and 5 men. And all were hung. One man, Giles Corey, was accused of being a dreadful wizard. He was slowly crushed with heavy rocks. What they'd do is they'd put something like a door on top of your body and pile rocks on till you died. Although 150 more men, women, and children were accused over the next several months, the panic slowly subsided and guilty verdicts were set aside, though the pain and bitterness lasted centuries. Today, stone memorials etched with the names of each of the condemned people stand across the street from where most of the trials were held. And those who made the unsupported allegations, many of them were ostracized. It all started out, supposedly, by some girls who wanted to get some attention. Well, there's been a number of folks who claim to be witches down through history who actually became rather famous. The one that I found the most fascinating was Marie Laveau, known as the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans. Now, she was a Creole herbalist, midwife, and voodoo practitioner. She was the toast of 19th century New Orleans. She charmed the city's elite by reading their fortunes, dispensing advice on love and marriage and money and health. Her divinations, no doubt, aided by inside information she collected on her wealthy clients from her network of informants. She was actually initially, as I remember the story, a hairstylist, which is what we would call it today. But as she did the hair of the society matrons, she would give them information that they didn't believe anybody could have known. But she had it. People in that era, in the upper reaches of society, as most of these society matrons were, really didn't see their black servants. Most of the servants were black. So they would talk about things in front of the servants that they never should have discussed. And those servants would tell others, and eventually it reached the ears of Marie Laveau. And Marie Laveau had a daughter who was her spinning image. So quite often they would pretend to be the same person so she could be in two places at one time. Strolling the town in her turban and jewelry, Marie Laveau became a community leader, helping the poor and incarcerated. When she died in 1881 at the age of 79, her funeral was a major event that drew the leading citizens of New Orleans. On her tomb in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1, people scratched 3 X's into the stone, believing she'd bring them good luck. And there had been a lot of ghostly sightings of a turban-top woman wandering through the cemetery. I went to, my wife had a meeting in New Orleans, and I wandered the city. And I went to her gravesite, which is a monument in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1. And I have never seen so much in the way of money and credit cards and everything you can imagine stuck in cracks on her tomb. And there was a guide there, and I asked him, I said, where I live, that all vanished the first night. She said nothing left had ever been touched because everyone still fears Marie Laveau's wrath if you desecrate her tomb. In the mid-1930s, there was a story that the ghost of Marie Laveau slapped the crap out of a man who didn't recognize her, and then she vanished into thin air. Well, from there, let's turn to Leonardtown in Maryland. According to legend, the indentations in an 875-pound boulder that was moved from the woods to the courthouse lawn in Leonardtown, Maryland in the 1970s was left by a 17th-century witch by the name of Maud Dyer as she pressed her hands and knees into the stone in her dying moments. Anybody who walks close by that stone is said to feel dizzy and faint. She was one of the many women accused of witchcraft during the 1600s in the American colonies. She was driven out of her cottage by townspeople on a cold winter night, and her body was found frozen to what many believe is that same stone. And she is said to have cursed it for eternity. And then, of course, one of the most famous witches in history was the Bell Witch. This took place in Tennessee. In 1817, farmer John Bell saw a strange creature resembling a dog that had a rabbit's head. Aimed his weapon at the creature, but it vanished. Soon after, the family, who lived near Adams, Tennessee, heard knocking on the doors and walls, followed by the sounds of gnawing on the beds and chains rattling. Then sheets were pulled off the beds, pillows tossed to the floor, and the children, especially the Bell's youngest daughter, Betsy, were bitten, pinched, and prodded by something that was invisible. Well, as the presence grew stronger, it announced its intention to kill John Bell. He died in 1820 at the age of 70 with the ghost, who's said to be the spirit of a witch by the name of Kate, believed to have poisoned him. It's said that she switched his medication. Kate was said to have laughed and sung at his deathbed and during his funeral. In 2018, Lucy Butler, descendant of John Bell Jr., claimed the Bell Witch follows the family wherever they go. She told the Associated Press during an interview that I saw a lot of things. A lot of strange things happen. I was there. And then in Britain, we have the most famous witch of all, Sybil Leake. She claims to be descended from an ancestral line of witches dating to the 12th century. Once described herself as an ordinary witch from the New Forest in England. As her fame grew from her writing and lecturing about the supernatural, the occult, and the mystical, she began to prefer calling herself a druid. She once said, "The witches are working class. The druids are the priest." Well, she's been called Britain's best-known witch, but she eventually grew tired of her celebrity status, as did her neighbors in the village of Burley, who complained she was an embarrassing fraud who attracted too many fans and tourists flocking to see the local white witch. Well, when her landlord refused to renew her lease because she was a witch, she left for the U.S. in the 1960s, where she lived out her life as a writer and celebrity. She published more than 60 books, including The Diary of a Witch, Numerology of the Magic Numbers, and the Sybil Leake Book of Fortune Telling. She died in 1982 in Florida at the age of 65. Well, then we have the father of Wicca, Gerald Gardner. Retiring to his native England in 1936 after a career as a civil service in Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, Borneo and Malaya, Gerald Gardner joined an occult group and was initiated into a coven, inspired by his interest in the mystical practices of the native peoples he knew in the East. Well, merging these rituals with ideas from the Freemasons, Celtic lore, Egyptian ideologies, and the writings of Aleister Crowley, the most evil man alive, Gardner formed Wicca, which he popularized in books like the 1954's Witchcraft Today and The Meaning of Witchcraft in 1959. According to biographer and Wiccan initiate Philip Heselton, He initiated a lot of folks into the Wiccan culture. He felt it was important, and it survived. Well, soon spreading to the U.S., Australia, and other countries, Wicca now has anywhere between 100,000 and 800,000 followers globally. Gardner died in February 1964 at the age of 79. Well, of course, there have been a lot of TV and movie witches that have made, for lack of a better term, that had become well known. Well, when you're talking about witches, there are certain words you need to be aware of. For example, amulets. Those are objects that ward off evil spirits or thwart something bad from happening. Amulets, along with charms and talismans, can take the form of anything from a simple rock to an intricate piece of jewelry. And of course, we have the inimitable broomstick. The link between witches and broomsticks may have been inspired by a pagan fertility ritual in which farmers danced astride brooms, as well as poles and pitchforks. But the association of witches and broomsticks took hold in the Middle Ages. Both women and men were known to slather a broomstick with a hallucinogenic fungus from rye bread and press it under their armpits or between their legs. As the fungus was absorbed into their body, they'd then fly as far as their senses were concerned. Racy engravings of women straddling big staffs fed fears about female empowerment, branding them as witches. And of course, the powers that be from that time period couldn't allow that. Then we have the very famous cauldron. Double toil and trouble, the fire burn and cauldron bubble. That's the iconic line in Shakespeare's Macbeth. In writing that, he drew on folk tales that ascribe mystical powers to an otherwise common cooking implement. The cauldron, the word comes from the Norman French cauldron, is said to have been associated with witches because it symbolizes the womb, a piece of transformation and a place of transformation and creation. Its three legs representing the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. And in almost every witch is said to have a devil's mark. Areas on a witch's body that are said to be insensitive to piercing by a needle and don't bleed. Suspected witches were searched for these signs during the witch trials of the 16th and 17th centuries in some countries. The mark is regarded as an extra nipple used to suckle a witch's familiar. Warts are also a sign believed to have been caused by the devil's claw or a branding iron. Then we have the very famous elixir of life that astrologers were said to have been searching for. For millennia, people have dreamed of a potion that gives the power of immortality, and they've risked everything to find it or to make it. In the 3rd century BC, a Qin dynasty emperor sent an alchemist out to sea with 500 young men and 500 young women. They were supposed to search for that elusive elixir. They never came back. A Ming Dynasty emperor, some 1,600 years later, drank a brew with mercury and dropped dead immediately. Centuries later, alchemists in Dark Age Europe were consumed with the search for the Philosopher's Stone, a material they thought could turn base metals like mercury into gold and silver or even achieve eternal life. Tibetan Buddhist tradition, the equivalent of the Philosopher's Stone, is described as a pearl in the possession of the Buddha. And then there's the inimitable familiar. You might call that a witch's sidekick or helper who appears in animal form. A familiar is said to come either from the devil or from another witch. It can take the form of anything from a dog or a cat to an insect and can be sent by the witch into the world to spy on humans. How about a grimoire? During the Middle Ages, books of spells called grimoires became popular, said to have been written by such unlikely authors as King Solomon, the Roman poet Virgil, Greek philosopher Aristotle, and mathematician Ptolemy. The books laid out instructions for casting spells, making charms, and summoning spirits, demons, and angels. And of course, every self-respecting witch has to have a hat. Now, many of the theories for the link between pointy black hats and witchcraft are evil. One of the most compelling is that women who home-brewed beer for sale during the Middle Ages wore hats that had points, drawing the resentment of their male competitors and feeding into a more general fear that women's knowledge of brewing and herbology spilled into the occult. The image was cemented in popular culture with an illustration in L. Frank Baum's The Wonderful Wizard of Oz in 1900. He placed a black pointed hat on the Wicked Witch of the West. And that same look was carried through to the 1939 movie. You know, quite often, the accusation of witch was made by males to get rid of competitors. And then, of course, the church got involved with the Inquisition. They rooted out heretics and dissenters and witches, and this campaign started in the Middle Ages. And the brutal torture intensified with the Spanish Inquisition. It began in 1478 and actually lasted for centuries. And what historians say was much more about consolidation of political power as a fight against heresy. In fact, the Catholic Church had an Inquisition department, if you will, until recently. Then every Halloween, you see the jack-o'-lantern. It's a spooky car of pumpkin, turnips, and root vegetables with a candle inside. They were originally used in Ireland and Scotland to represent spirits and to ward off evil spirits on Halloween. That's when the wall between the living and the dead was its thinnest. One legend tells of a man named Stingy Jack who tricked the devil into not taking his soul and was doomed to wander the earth with only a lantern to light his way for the remainder of time. Then, of course, karma is a well-known term. That's a principle of Indian religion that says good thoughts and actions in this life and previous ones can shape fate and destiny. Some witnesses adopted this concept as the rule of three, or the threefold law, in which whatever energy a person puts out into the world, positive or negative, comes back three times as strong. Well, and quite often you'll see a supposed witch having a knotted cord or hair and feathers, and that's said to be a charm for casting spells and curses. And then, of course, we have the ever-popular Malleus Maleficarum, Latin for Hammer of the Witches. It was a 1486 witch-hunting manual by a pair of German monks. And this manual instructed Catholics and Protestants for hundreds of years on how to identify and punish witches. The book advised that witches tended to be women due to their temperament toward flux, loose tongues, and tendency to be more lustful than men, and recommended torture as an effective tool for confession. When in doubt, beat it out of them. Then we have necromancy, one more time, communicating with the dead in the hopes of predicting the future. And then quite often you'll see discussions about omens, phenomena in nature that can be interpreted as signs or messages. They can be anything from a raven signaling impending doom to acorns predicting good luck. And then, of course, what self-respecting witch doesn't create potions? Those are liquids with powers to poison or transform a bewitched, to harken back to Greek myths of brews from herbs or pharmaka, from which we get the word pharmacy. These are believed to transform men into pigs and other animals. During the Middle Ages, brews of hallucinogenic plants and other strange ingredients were used to make ointments or witches' salves, promising to cure ailments of the body and the soul. One 16th century recipe claimed that a concoction of crushed earthworms and periwinkle could make somebody fall in love with you. Well, then we have the idea that society position didn't make somebody immune from being accused of being a witch. Even royalties were not immune from being accused. In the early 1400s, Dowager Queen Joanna of Navarre, the second wife of King Henry IV of England, was accused of using magic to try to kill her stepson, Henry V. She was imprisoned in Leeds Castle for several years and had her large fortune and land confiscated. She was finally released in 1442 and her money returned to her, short before Henry V died. Guess he wanted to make sure he wasn't cursed in the next world. And then, of course, we have runes. Cryptic writings with magical powers. These runes were often etched into medieval swords for good luck. Today, witches' runes contain what are called powerful symbols to cast spells and ensure blessings. And then, of course, part and parcel with being a witch is the casting of spells. These incantations to heal and ingratiate, destroy, or seduce have long been sung, spoken, or chanted for as long as people have wanted or needed to believe. The most famous one, abracadabra. They come from the ancient Greek word abraxas, carved onto charms and later invoked by a 2nd century physician who prescribed malaria sufferers an amulet with the word written in the shape of a triangle to cure that disease. I could not find any proof that it actually worked. And then, of course, we have talismans, which are similar to amulets. Those are charms and pendants and rings and other objects that witches use for casting spells and to grant protection. And then the term unwitch is used to release a person from a witch or from witchcraft. And, of course, we have the ever-present word voodoo, an Afro-Caribbean religion originating in Haiti. Voodoo, or Vergon, as it's called by practitioners, blends traditional West African religion with Christianity, includes songs, folklore, stories, folk medicine, and spirit worship. Voodoo spread along with the slave trade and has been widely misunderstood and been the subject of racist interpretations and depictions in popular culture. Voodoo dolls, for instance, have virtually nothing to do with voodoo. And, of course, if you're a witch, you've got to have a wand. And this term has roots in ancient Greek mythology. Homer placed a wand, which he called a rod, in the hands of the god Hermes to put people to sleep. These objects morphed by the Middle Ages into the smaller, thinner sticks, which came from trees filled with a single chop at sunrise on Wednesday, that we know today as from the Harry Potter stories. Then we have X. It marks the spot of the mystic cross. In palmistry, the little X between the top two major creases on the hand, the headline and the heart line, represents intuition or a sixth sense. Then the zodiac, which has been part and parcel of so many mystical concepts. The 12 signs of the zodiac in Western culture, Aries, Taurus, Gemini, Cancer, Leo, Virgo, Libra, Scorpio, Sagittarius, Capricorn, Aquarius, and Pisces, represent 30-degree slices of the Earth's 360-degree circle around the sun. And they're said to relate to specific human personality traits. It helps in making predictions, and of course they inspire the cheesy pickup line, "What's your sign?" that I've heard in so many bars that I've had the misfortune to wander into over my lifetime. Well, let's talk about the number 13, one of the most enduring superstitions. It got its start as an ancient misprint, apparently. Nobody in the Western world hates on the number 12. They buy a dozen eggs, celebrate the 12 days of Christmas, follow a calendar with 12 months, put the middle of the day at 12 o'clock. It was the ancient Sumerians who developed a numeral system based on using 12. They called 12 the perfect number. But if you add one, everybody really gets hyper. Many elevators skip floors from 12 to 14. Airports don't have a gate 13. No hospital patient will recover in a room numbered 13. And Friday the 13th is considered the unluckiest day of them all. Though I found the opposite to be true. You blame the fear of 13 in part on the Code of Hammurabi, one of civilization's earliest legal codes. Created by a Babylonian king Hammurabi in the 18th century B.C., it omits from its hundreds of laws and regulations rules the number 13. While some historians believe that may have just been an ancient typo, the omission put a cloud over that number that would only darken. Norse legends tell of the treacherous god Loki crushing a 12-person dinner party in Valhalla, unleashing mayhem on the world. While the Bible lists 13 attendees at the Last Supper. It would come to be considered bad luck to seat 13 at a meal, a superstition that broadened to cover all things 13 related. And the Victorians concluded that since the crucifixion was on a Friday, any Friday falling on the 13th was doubly bad luck. Well, on this note, we've come to the end of today's show. And since this is Friday, we'll be back on Monday. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great weekend.